Hello and welcome to the Place-Based Methodologies at UTS podcast series. I am Ilaria Vanni and today I am here with Andrew Tolland, who's a lecturer in landscape architecture. Welcome, Andrew.
Thanks, Ilaria.
I will start asking you how you understand place in your research.
Well, a big part of my research is about modern Asian cities and how even large-scale infrastructure projects can be interpreted as producing distinct conditions of place in ways that allow you to read or interpret aspects of the history of the local landscape. So, for example, I used to live in Hong Kong, and behind the building where I lived, there was an old granite block retaining wall that buried a freshwater spring. During the major water crises that affected Hong Kong in the 1960s, people would come and collect the water in buckets as it was seeping out of the wall. The fact that it was a public retaining wall also meant that it could easily be accessed by anybody. This chance confluence of environmental conditions, infrastructure, and human needs is, for me, a more interesting way of understanding place than conventional urban design definitions.
And which methodologies do you use?
I used to be a lawyer and I'd still describe my methods as somewhat forensic. I like to gather a wide array of documentary and physical evidence and try to make a case with them. So I use an array of tools from conventional historical methods like archival research for visual or textual documentation, comparing different primary and secondary sources. And I combine these with landscape and architectural techniques like site observations, drawings and mapping, analysis of historical maps, plans and schematics. As far as my overall approach goes, the thing that synchronizes all of these different ways of acquiring information and evidence, I'd describe that as a kind of critical interpretation. I mean this in a classical humanities sense of parsing sets of texts, images and phenomena and using these to make certain claims about the meaning of the interrelationships between natural and built environments and human culture in particular settings and at particular points in time.
And would you say that this methodology or set of methodologies rather is specific to your discipline, or do you think that is used also by others?
Well, some of the methods like analytical landscape or architectural drawings are discipline specific, but others are kind of shared between landscape and architectural history and other related fields like art or literary criticism or history. And then there are others that are borrowed entirely from other disciplines like cultural geography or science and technology studies and so on.
And how do you apply them? How do you do your field work? Could you tell us step by step?
Okay, well, one of the most important things for us in landscape architecture or architecture, and this applies to both designers and to many historians and theorists of architecture and landscape architecture, is to prepare for our field work by having the most detailed and up-to-date scaled maps, plans, and drawings that we can get. This doesn't apply to all research, but it often arises if the research involves detailed site observations or investigations. So this means that a lot of effort goes into obtaining these base drawings and cleaning them up, and if necessary, doing our own drawings and then printing out hard copies at scale and taking them with us to the site. So Google Maps can be useful, and it's opened up a whole new range of possibilities, but it's still important for us to have more technical maps and plans. And this allows us, when we're out on site, to record detailed observations in drawn form or to mark precisely the location and direction of our photographs or videos. There are also lots of instances when the drawings or maps you start with are not entirely accurate or they're missing certain key pieces of information. And it's useful to be able to make these comparisons between drawings and reality. On a super practical level, it's important to have multiple copies of the drawings you're taking because inevitably you make some mistakes or you run out of space to record information. I also take a range of technical drawing pencils and pens and a scale ruler and a razor and so on. And a sketchbook's also important for making drawings or diagrams from observations on site that photographs or video would not adequately capture.
And what other technologies do you use?
So in addition to a camera for photographs or video, I use media management software called Adobe Bridge for managing my digital files and resources. I even use this for managing digital files from my own desktop research. So this allows me to view and edit the metadata of digital files, and I find this particularly useful both for being precise about images and documents that I've created during the course of my research, but I often have to trace the provenance of the images I come across online, and it's useful to do this because I can look up the embedded metadata of these files. I once wrote a piece for the journal Cabinet where I backtraced the precise date, time, location and angle and field of view and user identity of a set of Flickr images, and a big part of this involved piecing together information from the metadata of the digital files with other information and drawn architectural analysis.
Wonderful. And what kind of insights do these methodologies bring? What can you understand that is specific about place?
So I guess I'm particularly interested in what we might call the social or the everyday life of infrastructure in Asian cities and how this has created a distinctive experience of modernity. The bringing together of these analyses of archival maps and images and policy documents and engineering schematics and my own drawn analyses are methods that allow me to examine the way particular technical means of reshaping landscapes become part of people's everyday experiences of a place. So, for example, the shift from hand-laid stone seawalls to hydraulically dredged and pumped backfill was really a key part of the transformation of the character of the urban waterfront of Hong Kong from its earlier colonial condition, where it looked almost like a Mediterranean waterfront. The British used the word praia for these spaces, which itself was borrowed from the Portuguese. So over time, these waterfront spaces were transformed into enormously infrastructurally complex interlacings of skyscrapers, podiums and pedestrian tunnels and footbridges, elevated and buried highways, railways, stormwater drainage and so on, which is so distinctive of many parts of urban life in Hong Kong today.
And what kind of advice would you give to students who wanted to use some of these methodologies?
Well, sometimes the method of taking drawings out onto the actual site and comparing them to the realities of the space is called ground truthing. And this can be an especially useful method when you're trying to take a critical look at what planning authorities or designers or developers are proposing. So often these schemes can appear very appealing when you're sitting at your desk far away from the realities of an actual place. But when you take them out and compare them with actual conditions, you might begin to ask yourself, hang on, this doesn't seem like it's going to work, or I'm a bit skeptical about whether this will achieve what they say it will.
Wonderful. And in terms of texts, what would you suggest that our students read?
Okay, so there are a number of good texts about the mapping of landscapes that I really like. So one of them is James Corner's 1999 essay, The Agency of Mapping, Speculation, Critique and Invention, and that's in an edited book by Dennis Cosgrove called Mappings. And then there's another book by a woman called Laura Kurgan called Close Up at a Distance, Mapping Technology and Politics, which was published in 2013.
Thank you. And to finish, can you give us an example from your own research?
So I've just been talking about ground truthing, but this example might seem like exactly the opposite of ground truthing in the sense that it involved research I did on a proposal from the 1980s for a giant artificial island in Hong Kong that was never ultimately built. But some of the principles still apply though, because making maps and scale drawings allowed me to understand how the proposal changed and just what a massive area of new land and new infrastructure was proposed in comparison to what was already existing, and the ways in which this proposal operated as a kind of bargaining tool between Hong Kong's tycoons, the British government, the Chinese government, and the local government and bureaucracy during the period of the handover negotiations. So this research was published in a chapter called Hong Kong's Artificial Anti-Archipelago and the Unnaturing of the Natural in a book titled Places of Nature and Ecologies of Urbanism, edited by Anne Rademacher and K. Shivarama Krishnan, that was published last year, 2017.
Thank you so much, Andrew.
Thanks for having me, Ilaria.